want to thank Brother Jim for that reading in Psalm 107. I really enjoy words and phrases and trying to understand the origins and meanings of them. Now, Debbie, this is not going to be a word study. Don't worry too much about that. But I'm going to begin a new series based upon words and phrases that we use on a pretty regular basis that we may not realize had their origin in the Bible. There are lots of different phrases that we know. We studied one this past Wednesday night, the blind leading the blind. That is a phrase that, you know, people use to this day, but we understand it comes from the Bible. These are all phrases that we can easily point to, and I would say most people know blind leading the blind probably comes from the Bible, but it is such a common phrase that that's not going to be the focus of what we're studying. But there are some that we use that, honestly, when I started looking, you know, for examples to use over the next few months or weeks or months, there were some I was surprised that had origins in the Bible. And the phrase this morning I'm going to focus on is one of those phrases. Matter of fact, just totally coincidentally, Shelley used the phrase I'm going to talk about this morning yesterday. And I said, why did you say that? You know, she had no idea what I was working on. And so it was just a regular usage that she had. So I thought that was quite interesting. Now, this morning's phrase that we're going to focus on was found in verse 27 of Jim's reading. And I had absolutely no idea this phrase originated in the Bible. And it is going to be the basis of our discussion this morning. And that phrase is, at their wit's end. Phrase, like I said, Shelley used it yesterday. We all kind of have an idea of what that is. And so let's look at how it's used here in this context and maybe some lessons we can apply to ourselves. Now, Psalm 107 is generally considered a psalm that is just presenting a general situation that is experienced by every single one of us at one point or another. And it's usually when we are facing trials, and the psalmist is encouraging us to cry unto the Lord for relief, to reach out to him to be delivered from the trials and the troubles that we are facing. And so in this section of the psalm, the trials that are being faced are taking place on a deck of a ship. Some men have gone out to go fishing on their ship, and giant waves appear, and they are afflicting this ship greatly. It says that the waves would carry them up to the heavens and it would bring them all the way down to the depths. So this is great extremes that are being presented here. And they were being tossed around so much by the storm, it says that they were not able to even walk around. The storm was tossing the ship around that much. They staggered around on the deck, it said, like drunken men. So they're in total despair. They are no doubt probably very worried. They know they can't do anything to stop a storm, and they are just at total, you know, they are just totally being affected by the storm, and they are helpless. They're unable to stop it, and they are powerless to save themselves. And at this point in time, this morning's phrase is used. It says, they were at their wit's end. I consulted some different sources for a good definition for this phrase, and it's not like you can go to the dictionary and look it up. But there are places you can look up, and the one I found that I think applies most is the phrase that defines it this way: if you say that at your wit's end, you are emphasizing that you are so worried and exhausted by problems or difficulties that you do not know what to do next. I think that's a pretty good definition of a phrase. If I asked most of you what that meant, you're at the end of your rope. You just don't know what to do next. You don't know where to go or where to turn. We can easily see that these sailors fit that category, that they just didn't know what to do. They were powerless. And they were most likely exhausted from the physical stresses being put on the boat, which then put on them, because we know that they weren't able to walk very easily. And so it was clear they were out of options. They didn't know what to do. They were at their wit's end. Now, it's a condition that afflicts us from time to time as They were being affected by waves of the storm. We are also affected in that way. Different troubles that come through our life, and we are being tossed and turned, just like this ship was in the storm. Like the sailors in Psalm 107, maybe when that happens to us, our courage melts away, as it says that theirs did. They were at the mercy of the storm. Now, the Hebrew word for melted that's used here means to consume, dissolve, be faint-hearted, melt away, make soft. So you can easily see that their courage, which probably once was there, prior to the storm arising, they would, you know, they go out on a boat every day and, you know, put themselves at the mercy of the elements. So they must have some courage, but in this situation, it just had left them. So one thing we need to understand, though, about this example here, if we look at verse 25, it does tell us one thing. It tells us that the Lord is the one who initiated the storm. The storm was at his beck and call. He's the one that raised the wind. He's the one that stirred up the waves. He's the one that was tossing the ship. This is something that we can use to help us through the difficult times, as an encouragement, knowing that when trials face us, if we're living, you know, the lives we should, but yet we are struggling and being, you know, faced by these temptations, we can understand that this is the Lord trying to help us, trying to strengthen us. It has a purpose for it all. If we look at 1 Peter chapter 4, verses 12 through 13, Peter writes, "Beloved, do not be surprised at the fiery trial when it comes upon you to test you, as though something strange were happening to you. But rejoice insofar as you share Christ's sufferings, that you may also rejoice and be glad when his glory is revealed." So this is not something that we should be surprised at. Peter has told us for millennia that when we are tested, it's from the Lord, and it's designed to test us, and it's there to make us realize the glory that is found in the Lord. Now, that's all great, but when you're feeling stress and you're being troubled, it's upon us to focus on that. We may be facing a financial problem, maybe facing a situation with your job or your family or whatever the case may be. You're struggling to deal with this situation. You just keep maybe avoiding it. You just keep maybe not addressing it, whatever the case may be. But one day, you finally ask the Lord for help. How long will you allow me to go through this? When is this going to end, you may say. You call out to the Lord. Well, when did the storm stop for the sailors in Psalm 107? The storm stopped because two things happened, according to the psalmist. First, the sailors did come to their wits' end. They realized that anything that they had been trying to maybe lighten their load or whatever the case may be, it was not successful. They were not able to do anything themselves. So the second thing that we're told that they did is they cried to the Lord in the midst of their trouble. They turned to him for help. That's in verses 28 through 31. Right now, you could be avoiding the situation, or you could be not doing anything about it. You just keep the storm raging by not dealing with it. You could be missing the calm that's available, just like we're told these men found, it said, their desired haven or a safe haven. They got relief from the storm. But once again, how does this happen? It happens when you doubt the Lord's ability to help you. That's what keeps the storm going. It sounds simple, but from the very beginning, the Lord has been wanting our trust, and he wants our confidence in him, and he wants us to display it. And so when that storm is raging, maybe we need to think, is this because I haven't reached out to the Lord? I'm not trusting him to turn it over to him. Again and again, God brings people to their wits' end to see if they would trust him, to see if they would reach out. In Exodus chapter 14, we find an account of the children of Israel, where they are faced with a very difficult situation. They're at the Red Sea. The Lord brought them to a place called Pihahiroth, and we're told it was between Migdol and the sea. Now, I couldn't go to a map necessarily and point to Migdol or that Pi Hahiroth, but I know if they're between a city and a sea, their options are limited about where they can go. Now, if you can't go across the sea, you may turn back to the city, except Pharaoh is behind them at this point in time. They are in a bad situation. They can't move forward, and Pharaoh has changed his mind. He wants them back. He's not going to let them go. They were in a place of hopelessness, human hopelessness. But God had led them there for this test. Had the Israelites simply believed one promise that God had made for them, they would have been free from all worry and fear. Now, what led them there? Well, if we look at Deuteronomy chapter 1, verses 29 through 33, yes, this is after the events of this, but it's recounting the situation that they had been told prior to the Red Sea. So in Deuteronomy chapter 1, 29, "Then I said to you, do not be in dread or afraid of them. The Lord your God who goes before you will himself fight for you, just as he did for you in Egypt before your eyes and in the wilderness, where you have seen how the Lord your God carried you, as a man carries his son, all the way that you went until you came to this place. Yet in spite of this word, you did not believe the Lord your God, who went before you in the way to seek you out a place to pitch your tents, in fire by night and in the cloud by day, to show you by what way you should go." The children of Israel hadn't arrived at the sea because they decided to go there on their own. No, the fire and the cloud, depending whether it was day or night, had led them there. And we're told here in Deuteronomy that if they had just trusted the Lord, he wasn't going to let anything happen to them. They followed the cloud and they followed the fire, but when they got to a point of a little bit of stress, a little bit of frustration or hopelessness, they worried. Instead of listening to what the Lord had told them, that he would protect them like a man carries his son, he would protect them. Moses reminds them of this in Deuteronomy. So here it came about that the cloud stopped at the edge of the sea. Through human means, they would not be able to get through across the Red Sea. And now Pharaoh's army was fast approaching. So just like the Israelites, no matter what storm you're going through, no matter how bad it seems, the Lord has put you in that situation, put you at your wit's end. And he's looking for you to reach out to him. Now, God is never caught by surprise. He doesn't have to improvise when troubles do come up. Long before Israel left Egypt and arrived there at the sea, God knew what he was going to do. He had known all along that this was where they were going to be and what was going to happen. So we have to feel that when we are faced with troubles, the Lord isn't surprised by them. He's led them to this because he's testing us. He wants to see if we'll put our trust in him. Still, God did what he had planned all along. He delivered Israel with a miracle that no human could have ever imagined. The splitting of water, it's nothing that they would have possibly imagined could have happened. They might have been saying to themselves, the only way we're getting out of here is if somehow we're getting across the sea, but they never thought they'd walk through the sea. With that fresh in their mind, we're told in the next chapter in Exodus 15 that just 3 days' journey later, they arrived at a place called Marah. But there was something wrong. There was water there, and I'd happen to think they didn't stop for a little pool of water. This probably was a large amount of water that this many people could drink. But they couldn't drink it. We're told that the water was bitter. Now, I was curious kind of what bitter water was, and it's more like brackish water. You know, it's not very clear, clean. It's not something most people would look at and say, yeah, I'm going to have a drink of that. They were faced with an issue. They were in the desert. They were thirsty. And the only water that was around them was not palatable. Do you think they look back on what happened just 3 days ago? Oh, the Lord delivered us from an army. Surely he can allow us to be able to drink this somehow. They didn't learn their lesson at all. Because all they did, instead of turning to the Lord for help, they grumbled. They complained. And they stressed Moses greatly. Moses fortunately, had either prior to the Red Sea or, you know, with his faith that he had learned this lesson a long time ago. He didn't turn to them and say, I don't know what to do either. What are we going to do? Moses cried out to the Lord. He asked the Lord, and the Lord gave him a solution. Depending on what version you're reading, it says that either there was a tree or there was a log, but there was something there that the Lord had provisioned to be there. You know, the Lord isn't surprised by anything, and he very likely purposed this tree to be there for this very purpose. He told Moses, throw the log in the water, and it'll clean the water, making it sweet, which I take to meaning it's drinkable. And Moses had the faith that the people apparently did not have. When they were at their wits' end, Moses wasn't at his, because he trusted in the Lord. He knew the Lord would be helping him. So what can we learn from Moses in this? Well, the Lord desires this kind of faith from us in everyday matters. It doesn't matter whether your trial is with your family. It doesn't matter if your trial is with your job or with just putting food on the table. You know, different times in our lives, I'm sure we've all struggled. Where's our next meal going to come from? Well, God has promised to bless us if we are faithful to him. And if when we are faced with these temptations, if we rely on him and we call upon him, he will help us. I mentioned a few weeks ago, my job situation is changing, and normally I'd be very nervous about it. I'd be very uncertain, but when I was told of the arrangement and that it just looked like it was right, well, I'm looking at the Lord as having a hand in that I'm feeling very confident about the situation because I feel the Lord has led me to this spot. And so when the storm comes, if you have the faith in the Lord, you will stand strong. You won't get tossed and turned if we have that faith. And we do that because I'm sure we all can look back in our lives and see a situation where we've had trouble and we've asked the Lord for help and it's happened. If we don't, as long as we don't do what the children of Israel did and forget about it as soon as it happened and not be thankful to the Lord, we will learn the lesson for the next time. And our trust and our confidence in him can grow. And another thing that comes from this is I've had several people come to me and say, you're so calm about this. And I've told them it's because I feel the Lord has helped me. That is probably, people will notice if you handle adversity well. And it's just another way that we can be an example to our friends, family, neighbors, whoever the case may be, that are aware possibly of what you're going through. And if you handle it well, they themselves will notice it. And if it's a brother or sister that is noticing, you can even encourage them as that way. So when we find ourselves at our wits' end, trust to the Lord, call to him for help, and he will deliver us. That's a lesson we should learn from this phrase. I doubled up Jim Bragg on the schedule for some reason, so I will not ask him to do the prayer. Mike, would you mind just leading us in a word of prayer, and we'll be dismissed to class?